Here we go.
Brothers, sisters, siblings, welcome to Penn Sunday School, brought to you by Masterclass. I'm Matt Donnelly, and we're still broadcasting from all over the universe. Or just the Caribbean and Nevada, but we're welcoming in our patrons. We're still going to talk about Penn doing his movie with Timothée Chalamet. Plus, he's still performing for the King. Here he is, Preach the Love, brought to you by Masterclass, Penn Jillette.
You know, you've said that twice. I'll say it again. We're Preaching the Love, brought to you by Masterclass. They've got great deals for the holiday. You have somebody you need to buy a Masterclass membership for. Great discounts. Go to masterclass.com/Penn. And here we are. You want to hear more about Rennie's trip to Aurora? Because I might.
We can get into more, yeah. So listeners who are just joining us from Patreon won't know, but the last episode we got into a very little bit about Rennie been following Aurora in a professional way around the country to see her performance.
Rennie Rich, professional creep.
Now, you billboarded this story to me in a beautiful way that I want to billboard it too. And I hope I'm not stealing your thunder, but I'm going to billboard it the way you billboarded it to me.
Ready? I won't remember.
Tell us about weaponizing autism.
All right. So I was in San Francisco, staying at a hotel a few blocks away from the venue. And as I left the hotel to go to the show, I noticed a young couple that was obviously going to be going to the same location. Aurora fans of a certain age dress a certain way. You could spot them on the street very easily. So I slowed down enough that they caught up to me, and I started talking to them, as you know I would do. And about 5 minutes into that conversation, a few blocks down the road.
How old are these people?
I'd say college age, and I still don't know if they were brother, sister, or boyfriend, girlfriend.
Well, on Pornhub, those are the same.
Right.
And yes. One of them stepsister. Gets stuck. I don't know if they were stepsisters.
And one of them gets stuck in a washing machine, I think. So I didn't mean to kill the episode with that joke. I'm so sorry.
Well, I did have everybody mute, so you can't hear the laughter.
That's true.
About 5 minutes in, I realized that there's another older couple lagging behind about 15 feet behind us. And I realize all of a sudden that the dynamic has changed. These are the parents of these kids. And I'm the creepy old guy approaching them in the street for 5 minutes. They're a little concerned. So I lag back a little bit more to engage the parents instead of the kids. And I find from the mom that they've driven from Utah to San Francisco. It's a location. And eventually the mom asked me the question, do you like to read? Now, Matt, do you know what that means? There's hidden information in there. It's a dog whistle.
I don't. I do not.
All right.
They drove from Utah.
Now, sorry. Full context clues. I do know where this is going.
Yeah, so this is a telemarketing script that they are required to follow to the letter. And it starts with, do you read? And it doesn't matter how you answer. There's a flow chart that spins off from there that could go any direction. And they don't know that I know this flow chart. They don't know that I know Trey and Matt. They don't know anywhere this is going to go.
Well, most important, they don't know things that are wrong with you.
Well, they did see me approach their kids in the street, so they might have an idea. So here's where this normally goes with this script is I'm going to address it with aggressive atheism and make it uncomfortable for them. Mm-hmm. That's normally how this plays out. But I had not expected this to happen on the streets of San Francisco. It's not Utah. It's not a secret Mormon town like Las Vegas is. Mm-hmm. So I had to scramble in that moment. I did not want to wreck this show for the kids. We'd already had a delightful conversation prior. And the normal tailspin into hardcore atheism isn't going to be appropriate here.
Right.
So you realized that something was inappropriate and didn't do it?
A lot of these concerts are about preaching love. in the most earnest way possible and kindness. And I wanted to grow as a person for these shows.
Good.
So that's the angle. It was entirely about the show and not about people, but point taken, Mr. Gillette. So here's what I said, and I'll need to take a breath. Hang on a second. Yes, I love to read. However, I do work 7 days a week right now, and it's really taken time off my regular schedule of sitting down and reading a book. I love to open and smell the paper, and it hits your brain in a different way than audiobooks work, which is the way that I have to consume them now. I can only listen to them while I'm on the clock instead of doing it in my free time. But audio hits your ear on a different hemisphere than your eye hits your brain. And you can't process information the best way. It's not a good way to get information stuck into your head. Currently, I'm using audible.com, but I've been reading the David Lynch book and a couple other things. He talks a lot about rock and roll, but not in the way that all the other people who do biographies write about rock and roll. He talks a lot about how he made these business decisions ahead of time to get him into a place that I think other people could benefit if they want to make a career in the music business. Anyway, this went on for about 3 to 4 minutes before mom abandoned ship and started lagging back on her own. And the conversation was ended from the other side instead of from me.
Now, why don't you show us how it's supposed to go? You be the mom and I'll be a normal person.
So do you like to read?
I do. I do. I do like to read.
Oh, well, I've been reading this book. It's made me very happy over the last couple of years. It's called The Book of Mormon. Have you heard about it?
There you go. That's all you got to do. That's all you really need to. Yeah. I just wanted people to know what you were short circuiting or long circuiting in this case.
Yes. Yeah. Because I go to the same battle every time where I see Mormon children, LDS children biking around the neighborhood. And I joke with my wife all the time that they're out there pretending to proselytize while secretly just looking for Mormon households so they can go inside, use the toilet, and get a glass of lemonade. And that's what they do. They just go around and finally find an LDS household and hang out with other LDS people, and they don't convert anyone. And I always bite my tongue whenever they approach me, and I always say, no, thank you, I'm an atheist, you know, that kind of stuff. And the other, this is about probably now a month ago, but I didn't bite my tongue. And this is the thing, I talk about this on other podcasts as well as this one. You always say that, I wish I said blank. Penn and I are two people who usually do say blank, and you don't feel better for it. You know, like you think you wish you'd say, and so they see me unpacking groceries from my trunk, and they turn their little bikes around. They come right up to by my trunk, and they're like, hey, can we help you bring the groceries inside? I said, no, thank you. And they go, have you read, you know, the good word of, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I finally said, which I always think and I never say, I say, you know, if you spent the same amount of time doing something that's actually good instead of something that's potentially good, think about how much more you'd improve your community. And that's mean of me to say to children, but it's what I think every time. But this guy goes, oh no, there's nothing better I can do than spread the word of the Lord. He was ready for that in a heartbeat. He had a line ready to rock. And then he said,
You could spread your legs, you hot little piece of chicken. Did you try that?
He says, do you know anyone in the neighborhood who might be lonely or maybe ill and could use some company from us as we maybe talk to them about our Lord and Savior? And I said, did you hear how predatory that sounded? And that they did not have an answer for. And I said, oh, we're just trying to do. I said, I literally said, I'm going to go inside. You just think about the way you said that and think about how predatory that sounds, and you guys have a good night. And then I went inside and still felt terrible that I mouthed off to two teenagers.
Now, my way of dealing with people coming to the door proselytizing, which I have not done because I now live in a gated community, which is gated simply to keep Mormons out. when I lived out on the in the public, so to speak, I would, and I guess I shouldn't have done this, because now that you say teenagers and say it over and over again and use the word children, I think maybe what I did was wrong, but I sure thought it was funny. When I would see people knocking at my door, I usually wear nothing but gym shorts around the house.
Oh, right.
I would take off my gym shorts and I would walk to the door and I would fling open the door, standing there butt ass naked, and say, "How you doing? Come on in, let's have some pie."
I think that's a fine tactic.
Now,
the chat is asking about the lemonade thing. I think we should address that.
Okay.
They're not allowed hot caffeine.
Yes.
So they don't do coffee and tea, which would normally be what you would ask for in that situation.
Right.
So if you're
booked, that's why it's lemonade.
If you're booked for a week of magic shows, there's not very good coffee places around in Salt Lake City, and there's a ton of drive-throughs for soda shops that the lines back up for miles. And
yeah, I would encourage you to look up Sodalicious. It's insane.
It's more sweet. They add sweetness to soda, the sweetest thing we already drink in the world. They add a ton of different flavors to them that are all sugary. And somehow that's okay with the Lord, and coffee's not. But that's the way that goes.
I used to make my own kind of hot lemonade, which I called yik, when I was like 18 or 19, where I would get a pot on the stove and I would put some water in. And then I would take real lemon, you know, the bottles of lemon juice, and I would pour it in. And then I would take honey. And I would pour the honey in. And I would pour in honey and lemon until it was actually thick.
Yeah.
It was so sweet and so sour and so intense. And then I would drink that. I would drink that hot.
Oh. And you have damaged vocal cords, you say.
Yeah. and I know... I would like to have Dr. Pepper hot with lemon, but I don't drink caffeine anymore. So
yeah.
Neither can Mormons.
I will say, because one of the things I conflicted about is I do think in a world with like we're losing children to devices and social media and all this other stuff, and a lot of kids aren't proactively social. Maybe forcing two kids to get together and ride a bike all afternoon, maybe they might be better for it. Just on that level.
Especially if they get to pull up and see a man invite them in naked.
Yeah. I mean, to have always have a corollary witness is very powerful.
No, but if I'm on my property and in my home, and they've knocked on my door,
yes,
can I open the door naked?
I believe philosophically, yes. I know a friend, Reddy and I have a friend who got in trouble for doing this.
Really? It is not me?
It is not you. They actually had the cops called on him just for looking out of his window naked at people who were going door to door. And it turns out in the specific area of Las Vegas he lived in, there already was an ordinance about it. Because apparently there's an area of Las Vegas that used to be called Naked City.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like down by the Stratosphere in that area. Was one point in time historically called Naked City, and then apparently a lot of laws were drafted to stop it from being Naked City.
Well, because there were nudists that lived there.
Yes, and so they started all kinds of laws to stop it from being a public nudity section or area. And so in that town specifically, the cops called on him, and that town specifically had an ordinance against showing yourself naked to strangers going past your door.
Well, in San Francisco, you could be naked anywhere, anytime.
Right.
There's a thing that I thought was just folklore, but I knew a pizza delivery guy who said it was actually true, which was Tipper Tits. Do you know about this?
I have heard of this. This feels like something that would be in a movie I watched as a teenager and nowhere else.
Mm-hmm. Well, a pizza guy said it happens. And if you're a pizza delivery guy, it'll happen like once a night because there are so many strippers living in Vegas that you'll give them the pizza, you tell them how much it is, and they'll say to you, tip or tits.
Mm.
And if you say tits, they just take their shirt off, show you their tits, and they take the pizza without a tip. And he said the really sad thing about it is you don't make much money as a pizza delivery guy, and tips are really important. So then you would have to be a 19-year-old boy looking at a woman and going, tip, I think a tip.
I'm so sorry. I think I'm making a mistake here, but I have to take the money. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and everybody feels bad. seeing my breasts is not worth $2.50. That's a buck and a quarter of breast. That's a good deal. But I don't eat pizza. I didn't get many pizzas delivered, but oh, that's the wrong way. I've never been a pizza delivery guy.
Yes.
So I never found out.
Yeah.
But it seems like a pretty fun thing.
Yes.
So I was over in London.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of guy I am. Everybody asks you what kind of guy he's been. I was much more excited about meeting up with Andrew Hickey than meeting up with the King. I met them both before. Vanessa Williams was there doing her show, The Devil Wears Prada, doing a part of their show.
Mm-hmm.
And we did Gift Shop Trash, where we sell one of our items to a person, take their credit card, vanish it, and it appears within a nest of trash cans. And we had one actor that I never heard of that was supposed to do it with us, and they changed it to Vanessa Williams. And Vanessa Williams said what I think is wicked, wicked sexy, or maybe it's the opposite of sexy, or maybe I misunderstood it. I think all three of those are true.
Sure, in range.
But Vanessa Williams said, I can't bend over in this dress. Is that a problem for the bit? And Glenn said, no, no, she has to bend over. And they said, how far? And we said, to reach the floor. And they said, can we put the trash cans up on a table? And we said, no, that hurts the bit. And they said, well, she'll change her wardrobe then.
Oh.
Now, if you're wearing something you can't bend over in,
yeah,
is that sexy or not sexy? Or don't I understand what it means?
Well, my interpretation, I think the audiences would agree, which is that if you're saying you can't bend over, it's because it would reveal your ass or something. The dress is so short that it would reveal your ass.
That's what I thought, but I think I misunderstood.
My read on it
is she couldn't bend over.
Yeah, my read on it is going to damage the fabric. It's going to tear somewhere.
Oh, so it's so tight, but it could still be long, but it can be so tight that simply bending over might rip the dress.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm afraid that's what's true. I was thinking, well, she's wearing something that's just an inch and a half below her pussy and just a quarter of an inch above her areola. And if she bends over, the king is going to feel like he was king 300 years ago instead of now.
Dear Vanessa, when I heard you could not bend over, I was curious.
But there was no discussion with Vanessa about this,
mm-hmm.
which I think shows I've grown as a person. And she was wearing a long aqua. I just want to say aqua. Does it act like I knew a color? Maybe it was turquoise.
Okay.
Or maybe it was blue.
Can I go with cobalt? How about cobalt? Does that do anything for you?
Those are all four the same color.
And she had a train. I don't mean a bunch of guys lined up to gangbang. No. That's none of my business.
Again,
her King dress
300 years ago.
She had a long thing on her dress, which Teller wanted to walk out with her on his arm because she was walking in very high heels. He wanted to steady her. Just a little piece of advice. If you want to be steadied, don't grab Teller. If you're starting to fall and you have a choice between Teller and any other person other than me, don't grab Teller.
Yeah.
If you have to choose between Teller and Vanessa Williams in 6-inch heels,
yeah,
go for the heels.
Yeah. So they walked out. But I walked out on stage in front of a king at the Royal Albert Hall, trying desperately not to trip over Vanessa's train. And although I've seen in many Marx Brothers movies, if you just step on the train, the whole dress comes off. And I walked out.
You don't have the most elegant gait, let's say.
I don't have complete control of my gait.
No.
My gait does its own thing. My Laurie Anderson did this wonderful piece about, she described it in terms of physics, but walking can be described as falling forward and catching yourself. And it was all about when we're walking, we're constantly falling. And it was a beautiful thing when Laurie Anderson said it. With me, it's just a statement of fact. When I need to get across a room, I fall across the room, essentially.
So you're not great to hold on to either.
No, I said if you had a choice between me and Teller, you'd choose Teller.
Got it.
But anybody else, you choose them. Which brings us this. Oh, is that, does someone know what that is? Falling
Looks
and walking?
Like it.
Yeah, good. It's a Laurie Anderson piece called This How You Can Be Falling and Walking at the Same Time. And, but my physical limitations, shall we say, my inability to just walk around was very useful to me. Because in the Timmy Chalamet movie, I play a farmer. And I don't think I'm giving anything away here. I get hit by a car, okay? When I say I get hit by a car, the stuntman gets hit by a car, right? Stuntman that looks like me. By the way, I've told you this before, don't ever meet your stunt person. There's no quicker way. There's no quicker way to feel inadequate. In walks a person with your hair and your height, except they're more attractive than you and stronger. And then they say things. The guy actually said this. He said the day before, he said, Ben's got some stubble on his face. I can grow that overnight, I think. It was 3 weeks stubble. 3 weeks. I can grow that overnight, you know.
You notoriously grow very slowly with the hair.
Right, right. But then he said something really inappropriate, I thought, which was someone was hammering a nail into the wall, and he said, you can just use my hard dick. It'll probably be faster. Anyway, my stunt double was a piece of ass, right? And his father had been stuntman on Penn and Teller Get Killed.
Oh, wow.
Now, this guy was 6'7" and, you know, 250 pounds. And I'd wonder how much work he gets as a stuntman, how many people there are to double like that.
Right.
I'll tell you something. At his size, he ain't doubling Tom Cruise. And Tom Cruise does his own stunts. They never tell you why Tom Cruise does his own stunts. Do you know why?
Why?
There's no stuntman small enough. They can't find him. They say, Tom, we have a 9-year-old stuntman, but he's a little taller than you.
I think it'd be great to do a movie with Tom Cruise where that guy is his stuntman, and you have to blatantly watch it switch to a 6'7" guy doing everything.
Anyway, so he's there in his overalls and looking like me, and he gets hit by a car, right? Boom. You're seeing someone hit by a car, stunt people just get hit by a car. I mean, they have their elbows protected. As a matter of fact, the stunt coordinator came over to me. You'll love this little inside information. And says, Ben, could you do the stunt department a real favor and just roll your sleeves down below your elbows? You keep pulling them up past your elbows. We have elbow pads, and we'd like to match.
Oh, wow.
So I had to keep my sleeves here. You could wear elbow pads and knee pads. And he still got hit by a fucking car. And he just gets hit by a fucking car, right? And his wig came off and he cut his head all up, right? Oh. But, you know, superficial cuts, but he was bleeding. And then they said, this is the genius of my acting. Then they said, Penn, lie down the way he was with your face away from the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then remember, you've just been hit by a car. Stand up, grab the shotgun, and shoot at us. Right? God, in his infinite wisdom, who is always working in mysterious ways, has decided that the 69 years that I've lived through, the bones I've broken, the abuse I've given my body, both sexual and otherwise, the state of my feet, the state of my back, the state of my mind is such that when I stand up as quickly, efficiently, and comfortably as possible, I look like I've just been hit by a car. It could not be more perfect. Could not be more perfect. I'm struggling to get up. Now, I have done nothing
right
except lay down. And I get up like, oh, I got to fuck with that. And I'm also making those noises, which are exactly appropriate. Just been hit by a car. I'm going, oh, fucking shit. And I go over and lean over to grab the gun, and that hurts. Oh, God damn it. So I was a method actor preparing for 69 years. I
born to play the role.
So I did. I think I did well. Timmy Chalamet had studied Dylan for 5 years, and he was very impressed when we talked how much I knew about Dylan. He said, whoa, you know a lot about Dylan. I said, yeah. I said, you know, it's wonderful. On your version of Subterranean Homesick Blues, if I was told that was an outtake of Dylan's that I never heard, I would look questioning for a moment, and then I might accept it. That's how good you are.
Wow.
And I said, but it's interesting that you pronounce the middle vowels in plain clothes, slightly clearer than Bob does in his version. And he said, have you heard this particular album? And I said, I wrote the liner notes for it. He went, oh. And then I was very upset that he had not been to the Dylan Center.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't very upset. That's a lie. But we talked about Dylan. And the last thing he said to me was, I'm really worried about you seeing the Dylan movie. You're the one I'm most worried about. And when I said back to him, you should be.
That is true. But that's just true. That is true. Yeah.
I sat in my trailer. What they did to me in that movie was remarkable. They came in and said, wow, you have beautiful skin. We're going to fuck it up. And they underlined the circles of my eyes. They did all the wrinkles. You saw the picture of me, right?
Oh, my. Do you know the story? Do you know the story or no?
What?
So Handsome Jack, you sent them to Jack first.
Yeah, yeah.
And Handsome Jack, we were on this cruise. We're on this cruise ship. We're doing the Conjurer's cruise, the Magic Castle Conjurer's mm-hmm. cruise on the Sun Princess. And Jack was there. And Jack goes, Matt, I've talked to you about something very serious. Someone has stolen your act. And and I want you to know, I mean, do you even know this guy? And I go, what? And he shows me pictures of you wearing overalls.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally go like, oh, haha, who is that? What's his name?
Yeah.
He goes, it's Penn. And I was like, what? And I ripped the phone back out of his hands. I couldn't believe it. I did not recognize you when I was handed a photo of you.
I don't have a mustache and goatee.
Yeah.
I'm not wearing glasses.
Yeah.
They've made my eyes bloodshot. They've given me even more wrinkles than I have. And then they said, wow, you have beautiful hands. And I said, thank you. And they said, they've never seen a day's work. I said, well, I have calluses on my fingers from playing bass that are pretty bad. And they said, yeah, this character is not a bass player, not a musician. So they did this awful stuff. I had to take all my rings off, all my bracelets, all my nail polish. and then they added veins in, and they gave me cuts and bruises all over my hands. And then they gave me this powder and said, rub this all over yourself. I said, what is it? They said, dirt. And then they went under my fingernails, right?
Yeah.
So my fingernails had black under them. And I would look at my hands and just feel awful. And I looked at myself in the mirror and couldn't recognize myself. It's amazing. And I sent the picture to my nephews, who still live in Greenfield. And I sent them that picture and they wrote back, you finally come back to Greenfield. This is the way you're supposed to look.
I did think of that story with the Brill Cream story.
Yeah.
Whereas I was like, this could be you. You belong here.
Yeah. This is me wild. This is where I belong. Right. And then the wardrobe woman, who I was very nice and very attractive and very nice, she came in. This was a scene that wasn't in the original movie. The director, Josh Softy, was fabulous, said to me, we like what you're doing with this character a lot. I think we're going to probably add some more stuff in. Because I said, I'm all done, right? Everything else is off screen. And they said, no, I think we're going to put a couple of the scenes back on screen. And I said, okay. So I've been in my trailer for 18 hours and never left because one day they didn't use me. And the next day I was in my trailer again waiting around. And I was just in there sitting because I wanted to stay angry and lonely and miserable so I would be more in character. I'm not a good enough actor to just turn that on.
Right. You know,
my friend Carrie, who's a great actor, she just cries like that. She can fall to pieces like that. But I have to like feel it for a while. So I was sitting there feeling that.
I'll just say, as an unsuccessful actor, no one's ever added scenes to anything I was doing ever. No one's ever added me back in. No one's ever to stick around.
So the wardrobe woman came in, and she had her official wardrobe hanger, and she said she had just a wardrobe hanger, and on it was a pair of boxer shorts, nothing else. Just boxer shorts. And she said to me, the director wants to see you in this. And I said, what do you mean? So the director wants to see how you look in just the boxer shorts. I said, I can't believe you're pulling this scam on me. She said, we have this flesh colored thing you can put on under it. I said, what is that? She said, well, we call it a cock sock. I said, okay, well, I call it a cock sock too. So I stood there in my boxer shorts. She left, I changed, stood there in my boxer shorts, and she opened the door. I said, can I take a picture? She took a picture of me. And there's more to this story, but I want to stop for a moment and talk about Masterclass. Because Masterclass features lifelong learning. And with Masterclass, you have one of your Christmas presents, two of your Christmas presents, three of your Christmas presents, four of your Christmas presents, five of your holiday presents, all taken care of. Because everybody you know wants to be a member of Masterclass because they'll be more interesting. You want that to do that. There are zillions of Masterclasses. Once you're a member, you get all these lessons. You can study anything. And your friends will have something to talk about besides the same boring stuff. It's really, really good for you. They have zillions of lessons taught to you by zillions of instructors. And they're really, really good. And even the stuff you don't think you want to learn, you want to learn. You want to hear Judd Apatow talk for a while. You want to hear Martha Stewart talk. You want to learn cooking, even to make perfect fried eggs. If you're not a vegan, you can learn that. There's all sorts of great stuff you can learn with these lessons. You can buy an annual membership, and they now have a deal that will set you up. These things can be listened to anywhere. They can be watched anywhere. They're great for when you're exercising, when you're driving. It's just a terrific thing. We use them all the time. You should do that. Every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, which I can guarantee you, you are not going to use. Masterclass always offers great offers during the holiday, sometimes as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/pen for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/pen. masterclass.com/pen. You're really going to want to do this. It's a really good thing. What's the last one you did, Matt?
I just finished up Steve Martin's, and it was incredible. I can't stop talking about it to my friends who perform.
It's fabulous. Steve Martin has, I mean, that's the level of person they get, the best you can possibly have.
Yeah.
We last left our protagonist. He was standing in his boxer shorts in a trailer.
Not even his boxer shorts.
No. Well, that's another part of the story.
Okay.
They were not my boxer shorts. She says, we have this bathrobe for you. And I said, this is a bathrobe like Hoff is my character, would be wearing. She said, no, it's just for your modesty. Now, remember, it's freezing cold. So I've also got a dive jacket. You know dive jackets, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're used on movie sets all the time. They're a coat that comes down below your knees, and they're very, very heavy. And you throw that on, and they put it on you right after every take because it's so cold. So I stood there, and I guess I'm going to be a little honest for a moment.
Okay.
I stood there in my boxer shorts with all my makeup on, and I looked in the mirror, and I said, am I comfortable going on film looking like this? This is Penn at 69 years old, 20 pounds over where he wants to be right now. Not as fat as I used to be, but still. I got no jewelry, no nothing. I can't even be me. Am I going to go on? And now, many times I've said, if you haven't worked naked, you're not in show business. I have performed naked live and on camera. And I thought about it, and I called an actor friend of mine, a woman that's done a lot of acting, and I said, well, we're both going to have both been topless in a major film. I said, well, you know, I never let anybody know this. Nobody knew this on the set. I was completely comfortable all the way. And so there I was on a set of a movie with my dive jacket with just boxer shorts underneath. And I then had to be firing a shotgun out of the window. And then I got shot, and they did a really believable bullet hole. They put me in a pool of blood. Then I had to have a dog come over and lick my face and the side of me while I said, help me, help me. And they put a hot dog under my neck so the dog would come there, put a hot dog on my other neck. The dog just walked across me. And as I laid there dead and freezing, by the way, there's no heat in the house, it was freezing cold. I mean, by freezing, I don't mean freezing. I mean, probably 38 degrees, 40 degrees, and I'm lying there in just boxer shorts. So I was shivering, couldn't control it. And that's good because I was dying, so it didn't matter. So we finish it, we get a cut, and the director says, boy, you turned this character Hoff, who was just a bad guy, into a like an existentialist, like an existential hero. He said, it's kind of a different thing in our movie. I kind of really like it. You gave this guy kind of depth, you know? And I went, well, thanks, I guess. And I went back, and I've got blood all over me, and I'm shivering, and I'm freezing cold. And the secondary wardrobe woman, she came over to me and said, oh, whoa, 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 don't get blood on the boxer shorts. Those are a period rental. Those are 1957 boxer shorts, and they're rented. We don't own them. Don't get blood on them. And I said, well, there's one drop of blood on. She said, I can get that off. I can get that off, but please don't get any more blood on. And I said, why did I just take them off? And she said, I said, I got a cock sock or whatever you, I got it on. So I'm not embarrassed. I'll just, because by the way, if I'm topless, I might as well be bottomless. So I take off the boxers and I pull the dive coat around right away. You know, I kind of turn and take it off. So I'm not inappropriate.
Your stuntman was still hammering an addition onto the house with his own penis.
Yeah. He couldn't find a cock sock that fit him. He said, is this my cock sock? And they said, no, that's Craft Services tent. She takes the boxer shorts. I mean, really, I said, she's like, I'll get the stain out. We'll be okay. But these are really expensive. I said, well, baby, you can sell them on eBay and make yourself a profit. You know, John Lennon's underwear from Shea Stadium went for a lot of money.
Oh, I bet.
Right?
Yeah. This is definitely the same category.
You don't have to be a schmuck about it. So that was it. I was lying on the floor dead.
Oh my gosh.
With my cock sock and my period boxer shorts.
And also, it sounds like you had a lot of physical stuff to do, which is a good thing, I feel like. I think the hardest part is when you're face-to-face with an actor and you don't have a lot to do and you just have to sit there and just try to, like, look like you're acting kind of thing. That's hard.
I was face-to-face with Timothy. And Timothy, it was called Timmy, by the way, by everybody.
Oh, wow.
Timmy. He's really good. He's really good. And he also did, I was told to not fraternize with him and not hang out so we'd have that attention. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to be told that because Timmy wouldn't do any of the rehearsals.
Oh.
So the first time I saw Timmy, he exploded across the lawn to talk to me. It was kind of nice.
That is cool.
Now I had a 1940s truck, a 1940 truck that I had to drive that was standard. And the standard shift came up through the floor. You could see the ground through there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people were shorter then and lived near the water. And I couldn't fit my knee under to get to the brake. I could not get to the brake. So I had to drive entirely by braking with the clutch, right?
Yeah.
And then using the parking brake. And I had to drive down the whole road with this truck and then get out and do my scene with Tim. He's all one shot, right? So I had this long drive. I was on a road, had a turn, drive, and then pull up and do the scene. So I'm in the truck car and I'm in second gear in the truck and I'm driving, worried about pulling up. And then the three worst words in the world come into my mind while I'm driving the truck and about to do my scene with one of the four top movie stars in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not counting India, in America, North America. Three words popped into my head. Now, somebody on this call, Patreon people, or you, Matt Donnelly, or Ready Rich, know what those three crippling words that came into my mind before I'm about to do a scene with Timmy Chalamet. What were those words, Matt Donnelly?
I don't belong here, or I can't do this. No, those are all four, right?
Ready, Rich? Where's Max? Bring up Max. Bring up
Chat's
Max.
Got it.
Bring up Max right now.
Where are you, Max? There you go.
What were the three words going through my head, Max?
I'm going to say they were Superman, the others.
Exactly. Yes, Superman, the others. That's what I had in my head. My acting, and by the way, you can go on YouTube and see Penn's worst acting, Superman, the others. I kept saying my first line in my head, saying to myself, this is going to sound just like Superman, the others.
Amazing.
And then I fell back into character. Max, amazing.
Good call, beautiful. Max. Beautiful. Good job, buddy. That's really funny.
You would have gotten that eventually, wouldn't you, Matt?
I would have. I would have. And gosh, that's a horrible thing to have come back into your brain.
I'm kind of lying about it because I really was totally focused on the scene.
Right.
It was afterwards that I thought Superman the Others fell apart.
But the gritting of your hands, the drawing on your face, the wearing the having shit to do, that all must help, right? I think probably one of the hardest things.
It helps tremendously.
Yeah.
I also found something else that's really funny. This should have happened long ago, of course, but they no longer use guns on movie sets. Did you know that?
Why is that?
There are no blanks.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
None of the guns can fire.
All the effects.
It's all done in post.
Post, yeah, yeah.
There's not even a sound. So I have a shotgun. I run out. Timmy grabs it. I go, right?
Yeah.
And we rehearse our scene. And we're going to do a take. And I have to pull the gun back and react to it, right? So I do that. And they'll put that all in a post. It was good. The stunt coordinator comes over and says one of the funniest things. Now, you know this is going to happen, right? But until someone tells you, you haven't thought of it. He said, yeah. I said, so it's weird to not use any guns anymore. He said, well, of course, we love it. We love not having even blanks around. Makes us all feel more comfortable. And he said, so we do the gun battles. He said, but the problem is, for rehearsals, all the actors yell, bang, bang, so they know when the firing is happening. And they all rehearse it with bang, bang, bang. And he said, then we do the take, and the actors are all yelling, bang, bang, while they're firing. And he said, we always have to go cut. You're saying bang. And the actor goes, what? And they go, you're saying.
Like a childhood game.
They don't even hear it, right? Because they've been rehearsing with it. Bang, bang. So the actors forget that when you're really firing a gun, you don't say bang.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that great?
That is awesome. That's really funny. Because when we played guns as a kids, that's what you do. You hold up a plastic
gun and
go bang. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bang, the right. Yeah, but yeah. Now these actors, you know. And what really makes me laugh is picturing, you know, the guy playing a gangbanger, you know.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
With all the outfit and everything looking really tough going, bang!
I was going to say, can you imagine, like, even finishing, like, a really good fight sequence where you finally get the gun and then all of a sudden, it, bang! You're like, great take, except you said bang at the end. And you're like, no.
No. First of all, you go, what?
Yeah.
You go, you said bang.
No.
What do you mean I said bang? When you fired the gun, you said bang. No, the gun fired. That's why I pulled my hand back. No, you said bang, and we're on your face. I was doing that rehearsal, wasn't I? Yes, you were.
Can someone else yell bang?
Yeah. Well, they can't.
No,
because
the audio.
You gotta pull your arm back. You gotta pull your arm back.
That's hard. That's hard to do.
Yeah.
That's hard.
So I'm firing a shotgun that's not firing.
This is it, right? Like, you hate when actors talk about things being hard because you're like, no, real jobs are hard, you know? But this is probably, what, hour 14 on set for you or something like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and cold.
You've been cold, and really cold. And in your boxers, yeah. And you got to ask.
But still,
the cock sock
still not as hard as, you know, 15 minutes working in an emergency room.
Yeah, or replacing an HVAC system on a roof in Vegas, you know, in August.
Right.
You know.
Or not nearly as hard as being a personal secretary to a dick for 2 hours.
Exactly. Right. So it's hard because you were describing what would be, I think, a hard experience, but it's still better than any real job.
Much better than any real job. And I got to tell you, Timmy's delightful. The director is a fucking genius. As you can tell, when you see Uncut Gems.
Yes.
When you see Uncut Gems, you know how good he is.
Yes.
But it's not just him.
he did Adam Sandler's last stand-up special too, which is crazy to see his aesthetics on a stand-up special. It's crazy.
It's so good.
Yeah,
it's so good. And the editor writes with him. They've been partners since they were children. And the editor said to me, which I love, he said, the advantage of being the writer and also the editor is I have no respect for the script whatsoever. None. He said, so I don't let anybody do a first assembly because they are going with the script for the first assembly. I don't want to see that. I don't care. I know the script. He said, the second this is done shooting, I have got found footage. I just have found footage. I'm going to make a movie out of it.
That's crazy.
He said, I don't shoot from the script. I don't edit from the script at all. He said, other people have to respect the writers. I don't. It's me and my high school friend, Josh. I don't give a fuck. He said, so I'm already editing this in my head, and I've made this scene different than you saw on page.
That is fascinating. That's so awesome.
It's really great. Really great. It's going to be a tremendous movie. And as much as anyone deserves to be a movie star, Timmy Chalamet does.
Yeah.
It was also funny. A mile down the road in each direction,
yeah,
there are police, right? And the police are cherry-topping and roadblocking. And you know who they're holding back?
No.
About 35 teenage girls.
Oh.
We're trying to get a glimpse of me in my boxer shorts.
We're wondering.
Or Timmy Chalamet. I don't know which.
Or as Amy has questioned, should we look for the cock sock on eBay instead of the underwear?
Yeah. that's a good one. That's a good one. It was a wonderful experience.
That's so cool.
You know, I'm not an actor. I'm not an actor. And Andy Lerner always makes fun of me because I say I'm not an actor, but I start telling a story. So I'm on set with Timmy Chalamet, you know?
Right.
But it's not what I'm trained to do. So I'm very far outside of my comfort zone.
For sure.
Using that phrase, but
that is an intimidating environment. Even if you,
it was really strange because the name of the movie, by the way, is Marnie Supreme. It was really amazing because all my actor friends told me, just don't be Penn. Don't be Penn. Just don't be Penn. Don't tell stories. Don't be funny.
Mm.
You know. And the hair guy, when he gave me my haircut, said, I'm giving you the worst haircut possible. I'm going to make it look so terrible. And then I went to set, and Josh said, make his hair look worse.
No.
And he said, I'm so sorry to do this. I said, yeah, and I'm going to fly to London and do a show for the King 5 days later. And he said, once we wrap, come back to the trailer. I'll give you the best haircut of your life.
Oh, very nice.
He said, and you will tell the King that an American queen gave you this haircut.
Perfect. Perfect.
And he gave me the best haircut I've ever had. And it was really strange. They did cut. They said, Penn is wrapped. And I went back to the chair for them to take all the blood off me. And I immediately started becoming me. It was really weird.
Wow.
Really weird. I started telling jokes, telling stories, and everybody started acting like, where did you come from?
Oh, fascinating.
I mean, it really was like showbiz stuff that I would scoff at. But I then went into the makeup chair, and he gave me a haircut. The makeup woman gave me hot towels, took all the makeup off, and she trimmed all around so that my goatee would show. And she gave me a manicure and cleaned my hands up. And it was amazing to sit in that chair and become me.
That's so cool. Pretty
great.
That's amazing. What a cool experience.
It was a very cool experience. And I think it's going to be a really, really good movie. I have a very small part. But I'll tell you, every single person, a complete professional, and kind and sweet from Timothée Chalamet right on by.
All right, should we wrap up and head it to the...
We should, we should. That was Penn Sunday School, brought to you by masterclass.com/Penn. You get to 50% off for the holidays at masterclass.com/Penn. And I will tell you, we will try to get to the people that have been waiting so patiently. Although having all the people waiting was worth it just for Max to know what the three words were.
Totally, 100%.
And that was Penn Sunday School. That was Penn Sunday School. Cha-cha-cha. And to our listening, you become naked. I think I've covered all the Timothée Chalamet. I'll do a little more on the King, and we'll get some questions the next show we do, which is going to be another bank show. Hey, Matt Donnelly, you have anything to thank?
I do. I want to thank the following people who support us over at patreon.com/Penn. These people all get signed postcards from Penn in the mail every month with fan-created artwork. I want to thank Adam Luce, Timo Tehoff, Adam Berzins, Carlos Alvarez, Michael Cornwall, Rob Aligar, Ross Devereaux, Ryan Matthews, Jeff Bacher, Michael Torbay invites the congregation to upload photos to his digital frame, michaeltorbay@ourskylight.com. Elon Lee, Jeff Loomis, Jacob Tony Called FedEx was on episode 545, McCully. Anyways, episode 545, someone solved it for you. Nicole Martin, Sugar Rush Socio, Music Man, Keith Corning, No Thank You Daddy, Rachel Hawkins, Josh Smith, Richard, Pete and Sally Say Aloha, and Challenge Penn to Dick Chicken. Uh-oh, it's back.
Okay. There we go.
Kelly McCauley. Jesus. Corey Mitchell, Robin Garnett, 10 years.
I almost had the camera down, you know, for that.
10 years ago, Penn married Tom and JL on 9/13/14. Ovi Dimitrian Jr., Jeremy R. 22, Witcher Burekowski, Kristen Kledick, Hattie Wambi, Michael Cohen, Dr. Scooplittle, Jeremiah Jenkins. Being able to control what Penn does with his genitals gives me an uncomfortable amount of power. Alexander Hoffman, Danny Olwine, Stephen Volcano, Steve, the gay magician who learned a lot about aftermarket breasts, Scooped Mids, and of course, Paul McBride. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.